Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Book Off, the literary podcast. We're the difference. I'm Joe Haddo, and wherever you're listening from, it's great to have you with us. And today, I'm joined by two brilliant authors who know a thing or two about writing a page-turner. My first guest is a Sunday Times best-selling author who's been writing for as long as she can remember. She worked as a lawyer before becoming a full-time writer and is also the co-host of the popular Honest Authors podcast. Here to tell us about her new novel, Wrong Place, Wrong Time, it's Gillian McAllister. Hello!
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's lovely to see you. Thanks very much for being here. My second guest is an international number one bestseller. Her books have been optioned for both film and TV, and she has published in more than 40 languages. Here to tell us about her brand new thriller, The It Girl, it's Ruth Ware. Welcome to you.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
What an absolute treat. And you two have been having a little natter while I was just very rudely on the phone. Do you know each other? Do I need to do intros, or is this all good now? We're all friends.
Oh, we know each other via social media.
We do. Yeah. I don't think we've met, have we?
No, I was just like, there's so many brilliant, you know, crime festivals and stuff. And I was just trying to remember if we'd ever hung out. But, but you know, I think mostly via Twitter and stuff.
Yeah, we've blurbed each other's most recent books, so...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, that's good.
It might be a bit of a fangirl fest. I apologise for that in advance.
Well, same. That's allowed. So, no awkwardness here. No, like, your proof's on my pile.
And will any of you be at one of the many festivals happening this summer? Is there a chance we can all meet in person, do you think?
I think I'll be at Harrogate.
Yeah, I'm not going to be at Harrogate this year, I don't think, because I'm touring America and coming back that weekend.
Oh, sorry about you.
Yeah, so that would be fun but exhausting. But I will be at Bloody Scotland if anyone's at that. So
great. I love the whole the difference of touring. I'm talking like I've done it myself. This is purely from authors telling me the difference when you tour the UK to America. It's like, oh yeah, well, in the UK you just hop a train or hop in the car and everything, and in America you're like, this flight to this place, then I'm across the country, then I'm up there. I mean, it must be really tiring, Ruth.
It's proper bonkers. It's like a flight every single morning and an event every single evening. And it literally is like you kind of, the way I've done it before is like down the East Coast, across the bottom, up the West Coast, and then you fly back. But yeah, by the end of it, because of course America, you know, has three time zones of its own, let alone the fact that you're in still sort of recovering from British time. By the end of it, I was like, I don't know what time it is. I don't know what meal I'm supposed to be eating. I don't know whether I'm hungry or airsick or exhausted. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Which is quite a whirlwind. Yeah, I can imagine. And quite a whirlwind week for you recently, Gillian, because not only did you publish your book, you decided to also get married and move house.
That is what I did. That is what I did. Yes, very ill-advisedly. We're probably going
to
get divorced.
We take our hats off to you because I'm sure you were.
Literally a whole year's worth of stress over in one go, though, Gillian. There's got to be, you know, like the rest of the year, surely, will just be plain sailing.
I think so. I was just thinking it was so weird to like wake up on today, Monday, and not have to move all my possessions or sign 2,000 hardbacks or, you know, feed 150 people at a wedding. I was like, I could just like go on this podcast and then walk the dog.
Oh, that sounds like a perfect Monday to me. Well, thank you both for being here. And for the next 30 minutes or so, we're going to talk about your brilliant new novels. We're going to get some reading recommendations from you of some things you've read and enjoyed recently. And of course, we will do the book off, where each of you gets 3 minutes to tell us about a book you love and you think that we should all read. We'll get to that, as I said, towards the end of the podcast. Firstly, then, let's talk about these brilliant books. Julian, Wrong Place, Wrong Time is your latest, which has just come out. And I was going to attempt to set this book up, but actually, I think I'd probably butcher it. So I'm gonna just pass it over to you and ask if you could give us the bracey, please.
I can. I feel well versed in this now. So Wrong Place, Wrong Time tells the story of Jen, who is waiting up for her teenage son, Todd. He's late. He arrives home on the street outside their house, and to her astonishment, he murders a complete stranger. He's remanded, charged with murder, refuses a solicitor, confesses. She returns home to what is now a crime scene, totally distraught. Her child was doing his A-levels. He was a nerd. He was really funny, like completely out of character. And she wakes up on what she thinks is the next day, but it's actually the day before the murder. And Todd is in his bedroom and has no idea what she's talking about. And the next time she sleeps, she wakes up the day before that. So she travels backwards day by day, and it asks the question, how do you stop a murder when it's already happened?
You've done this before. I like it. See, I'm glad I gave that over to you rather than trying to sort of find my way through it. I want to get into a little bit more about the sort of genres in this book and the way the story's told, but it's set in and around Liverpool, and I just wondered if that's a city that you know well, or why it was there that you were drawn to.
Yeah, I do now, because I've been a bit and I've done a bit of a tour there now. But basically the reason is because I wanted to write a scene where Jen visits the Anthony Gormley exhibition called Another Place, where there are, I don't know, maybe 40 stone or bronze statues looking out to sea. And for me, it was a perfect metaphor for her aloneness and perhaps her imagined different versions of herself, because she's totally displaced in space and time. And they're all, she says, looking out to sea for answers. And I was sort of aware of that exhibition. And so when I wrote that scene, I thought the whole book has to be set here. But it weirdly, fortuitously kind of worked out, because it's got an organised crime element and it needed a port. That was very important. And actually, there's currently a podcast. I can't remember the title, but it's investigating. There's been two reports of people entering a time loop in the last year in Liverpool, which they're investigating. It's like a paranormal podcast. It was like the perfect PR. Yeah, perhaps I've manifested something.
You have to get an interview on that podcast now.
I know. That's such a good idea. I will try to.
Got to put those wheels in motion. Yeah. I absolutely love those Gormleys. I've seen them a couple of times and they're stunning.
Yeah.
But also quite freaky.
Yeah, quite eerie. And I mean, my dog dropped her ball for one, because she didn't know. She was like, looks like a person to me. And I think they are kind of that like weird sort of a bit uncanny.
Yeah. We'll come back and talk a little bit more about Wrong Place, Wrong Time shortly. Ruth, The It Girl is your brand new novel. It's so new, it's not even out till the 4th of August. But can you introduce us to Hannah and Will and perhaps set this story up for us?
Yeah, so I feel I have to begin by saying it is The It Girl, not The IT Girl, as I've had some queries on social media. The title is in all caps on the... and I think because I've written quite a bit about technology and sort of apps and stuff, a few people were like, IT? But no, it is The It Girl, as in the 90s phenomenon of an It Girl. And yeah, it begins with So it's split into two halves. There's a before section of the narrative and an after section. And the first scene in the novel is from the before section, and it's my main character, Hannah, coming up to the room that she shares with her university flatmate, April. And she's walking up the stairs, and she can tell something is wrong because the door is open when it should be closed. And she goes inside to find that April has been killed and strangled. And then it switches to the after part of the narrative, which is 10 years later. Hannah's living in Edinburgh with her husband, Will. She's expecting his baby. And the man that was convicted for April's murder, largely on Hannah's evidence, has just died in prison. And it should be this moment of catharsis for Hannah, where she can finally put the past behind her. This is now a chapter that's closed. But in actual fact, what it does is kind of crystallizes doubts that she's been sort of sitting on for more than 10 years. And she finally starts to admit to herself that possibly she made a mistake and that her evidence sent an innocent man to jail. And so that's the rest of the story is sort of flicking back and forth between Hannah's memories of what happened 10 years ago at university and her experience in the present as she tries to figure out whether this guy did kill April, and if not, who did.
And what was the spark of inspiration for this story, Ruth?
Well, yeah, it's really hard to pin down. Some of my books have a really clear kind of inspiration point where I can sort of go, yes, it was that. This one was much more amorphous. But I think probably one significant chunk of it came from doing jury duty years ago.
All right.
The case I did was a really minor crime. It was completely different, but I was really surprised by the weight of responsibility that I felt and how much that preyed on me. And, you know, obviously you would take it seriously. It's an important duty, but it really did. Like, I sort of lost sleep over it. And it's, I started to think like what that would feel like to have a role that was much more critical in a court case, and in a court case with much higher stakes. And obviously, you know, here in the UK, we don't have the death penalty. So it's not going to be someone's life on the line in quite the same way as it is in some countries. But the guy in the novel does end up dying in prison. So effectively, Hannah's evidence has taken away his whole life. And I'd written books too about characters who are kind of socially awkward and sort of found it hard to fit in. And I tend to feel those people are sort of much more sinned against than sinning. You know, everybody makes preconceptions about other people based on their manner and how sort of socially adept they are. And I was interested in writing a book about someone who is from the outside quite unprepossessing, quite awkward, quite bullying in some ways, but how that feeds into other people's preconceptions about him. And eventually Hannah's preconceptions sort of catch up with her, and she realizes that she may have made some assumptions that were a bit more than sort of justified by the evidence.
Gillie, you were a lawyer for a while, and there's often sort of legal aspects in your books, but as I said earlier, I want to talk about sort of the genres of this book, because I think it was dubbed a psychological thriller, but it's sort of something else, really. And I just wondered if you had, you know, when you sit down, you kind of go, oh, I'm writing this book, or if it's just like, no, I'm writing what I want and someone else can attach a genre to it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think I've always been a little bit cross-genre. Like, a lot of my books are love stories, really, and the crime is sort of used to put pressure on relationships or to sort of explore. Like, it's very rare for me to write a whodunit. You know, I so often write a book where you know exactly who did it and why on the first page, and I sort of have other concerns. So I think I've always been a little bit in between genre, but I'm very sort of aware of that, and I knew that this was a bit of a risk when I had the idea. I knew it was sort of a big swing, and it might go either way. But I think Groundhog Day and things like that are sort of so ubiquitous. I think you can kind of play with them without really straying into sci-fi. Like, it's still a crime novel, really. It's just a bit sort of deconstructed. So I think it's, I do think it's a risk to mess with genre. And I've read some reviews that said she's moved into time travel. And I sort of thought, I'm not really, it's just a device, you know, to explore the things I usually explore. But I have made sure my next is not speculative in any way, just to kind of nail my colours to the mast.
But I personally loved this slightly genre-bending tale, really. You know, for me, it's very exciting. And also, like you say, playing with that Groundhog Day thing is exciting, I think.
Yeah, I mean, when I had the idea, I thought, how has nobody ever done this with kind of, rather than doing the same day over, just going backwards? Like, it felt quite sort of classic almost. And I sort of felt like it's so simple that I think a reader would be quite on board with it, especially if, you know, I tried to make it quite realistic within the confines of what is happening. Because, you know, Jen kind of goes to the doctor and she panics and she tries to prove it's happening to people. And that's what I would do in that situation. So it's sort of, I do think it still has realism in it. It just has a different kind of, one law of the universe has changed, but, you know, not loads. There's no aliens, etc.
Sort of thought, in a way, it was a very classic kind of detective novel, but just sort of made literal, you know, because in a way that is what detectives do, isn't it? Yeah. They go digging through the past, trying to find out what actually happened.
Yeah.
And your character just does that in the most literal way. Like, she's literally in the past trying to figure out what happened.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think, you know, a lot of people say it's sort of a crime novel told backwards, but really she's living, you know, Monday and then Sunday and then Saturday, but she's finding quite linear clues. You know, she finds A and then B and then C, and she adds them up in a methodical order, really. So in many ways, it's quite a classic structure. She just finds clues and figures it out. So yes, I think, I don't think it really strays into sci-fi, but I agree, it does. It definitely doesn't know what genre it is.
Ruth, how does it feel sat here, you know, maybe, what are we now, a couple of months away from publication? It must be that sort of exciting time, but also you're like, okay, come on, let's get this book out now. How are you feeling at the moment?
I always say this is the absolute worst time.
Oh, right.
Like, it should be exciting, and in a way it should feel great, because, you know, you've done all the hard work, there's a bit of a lull until the book comes out. But I personally find it the most stressful period, because the book's done, you can't make it any better, you know, it is what it is, for better or worse, but not many people have read it yet. So there's that kind of, it's a bit like that feeling of, you know, when you've sat your exams and you know that the dice is rolled, like, whatever, you know, your answers are set in stone, there's nothing you can change, but you're waiting to find out the mark. So I feel a bit like that. Like,
yeah.
Like, I'm waiting on my GCSE results all over again.
It's about the right time for GCSEs as well, when your child will be getting theirs and you'll be getting yours.
Exactly.
I think it'll be good marks all round, Ruth, don't worry.
Thank you, very
I always like to ask my guests what they've been reading and enjoying recently, because we all love getting book recommendations. I imagine, Ruth, that you've probably found some time to read, having sort of handed in the novel that's going to be published soon. So is there anything you've read and enjoyed recently that you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, what have I... See, this is where my mind always goes a complete blank.
Mine too, which is why I love asking people.
Yeah, pass it over to someone else. I did say that there was going to be a certain amount of fangirling. I did really love Gillian's. I thought it was incredibly inventive. It was one of those premises where I thought, damn it, I wish I'd written that. Yeah, another writer who genre bends very successfully, Sarah Pimber. I just finished her new one, Insomnia, which is really, really good. The ending is great, especially for people who've read Behind Her Eyes. I'm currently reading Erin Kelly's new one, which isn't out yet, The Skeleton Key, which is really good, really gothic, really spooky. So, yeah, having a good lovely. Run of it.
Yeah, lovely mix. Great. Thank you so much. What about you, Gillian? Have you managed to read anything in between publishing a book, moving house, getting married?
Yeah, I have a bit. I've weirdly been reading Tana French's backlist because okay. I had about three of hers I'd never read, so I just kind of read them all. I think I just read Broken Harbour, which is just exceptional. I've read Ruth's, which I loved. And I just read Again, Rachel by Marianne Keyes, which, you know, it's not a crime novel, but I thought it was so, I don't know if either of you read it, but it is so moving. Mm. And she just...
It is, yeah.
You know, God knows how many books in she is, but she just never phones it in. Like, that book would have sold as a debut to an unknown. It's phenomenal. So, yeah, I highly recommend that one.
It's brilliant. She was on an earlier episode of this very podcast talking about it, Gillian. And I read it just before we had our chat, and I literally was so stunned at how good it was. I wasn't expecting it. Not because I just thought, you know, Marianne Keyes wouldn't deliver, but I just wasn't expecting to be as into it as I was.
I think she over-delivered. Like, just, it was one of the best books I've read in recent times, really.
And it was so anticipated. As you say, it would have been so easy for her to just, you know, I think... we'd all buy the phone book if Marianne had written it. But
totally. Yeah.
And to go back to those characters as well, you know, that's quite a big decision.
Really brave to find new things to say.
So all round, an absolute winner. Lovely. Thank you for those recommendations.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
And now it's time for the book off, which is where each of you gets 3 minutes to tell us about a book you love that you think we should all read. And this book can be anything. It can be new, old, it can be fiction, non-fiction, poetry, children's books. It can be anything you want, as long as you love it and think we should all read it. So before we get into these, we're going to do a little bit of admin. And as you are technically travelling the furthest here, Gillian, from where you are, you get to decide if you go first or second.
Definitely first.
With no hesitation. And Ruth, as I said, you both have 3 minutes if you want to use them. You don't have to, but if you're still speaking as we cross the 3 minute mark, I'm either going to be ringing you out with the school bell or honking you out with the horn. So which one would you like at your 3 minutes?
Oh, blimey. I think the horn would be marginally less scary for me.
No problem at all. Right, I'm going to put 3 minutes on the clock then. And before we launch into it, Gillian, just tell us the book that you're putting forward.
It's Impossible by Sarah Lotz.
All right, then. So it's 3 minutes on the clock, if you want it, uninterrupted, to tell us all about impossible. Over to you.
So Sarah Lotz wrote a book that I loved years ago called The Three, which was massively high concept, partly because it was about three aeroplanes that downed at the same time, each containing one survivor, but mostly because the entire novel was told through sort of secondary sources. So is it secondary, primary? But, you know, emails, MSN chats, as it were, that kind of thing. So there was no, you know, a bit like The Appeal, there was no actual linear narrative. And I find her very creative and quite genre bending. And Impossible is billed as a rom-com. And interestingly, in the UK, they hide the twist on it. But I'm going to reveal it, because in America they reveal it, and I think it's necessary to pitch it. But so it tells the story of Bea and Nick, and it opens up with only emails, and they meet because he sends her a really offensive email not meant for her, and she replies to it. And what follows is, again, no narrative, just emails, really zingy banter of these two people falling in love. And they try to meet at, I think it's Euston Station in London. And this is the twist. What they realise is they were both at Euston Station and they both prove it, but they couldn't see each other because they are not in the same multiverse. And actually, Nick lives in a world where, so in Britain, they use euros in his world, for example. Trump has never been in power. So he is living in a kind of utopia. She is living in the present day / dystopia. So it has a little bit of a political bent, but it's absolutely a love story about whether they can ever meet. And the most astonishing thing it does is that they meet the other version of the person they're talking to who exists in their world. And that is the midpoint. So there's actually four of them all together. And I just thought that was totally genius. And it has an excellent payoff. And it is explained at the end. So there's no kind of damp squib there either. So yeah, I highly recommend.
Fantastic.
With wow.
30 seconds to spare as well.
On.
Yeah, brought that in. No problem. Fabulous. I absolutely love Sarah Lotz, and I got to have a chat with her quite recently before this book was published. Mm-hmm. And I think it's brilliant. I'm going to come back and talk about it shortly, Gillian, but you can take a rest now, have a breather, have another sip of tea. I'm putting 3 minutes back on the clock for you, Ruth, but before we start, just tell us the book you're putting forward, please.
So the book that I'm putting forward is My Sister, the Serial Killer by Oyinkan Braithwaite.
Love it. All righty. 3 minutes on the clock then to tell us about My Sister, the Serial Killer. Over to you.
Well, it's a book that I read a little while ago. It came out, I think, sort of about 3 or 4 years ago. But the characters have really stayed with me to the extent I sort of sometimes just think about them as I'm going about my daily business. And it's a book about murder. It's a book about families, but specifically it's a book about sisters and sisterhood. And as a big sister myself, that's something that I am fascinated by. I find sister bond really moving, and it's something that I'm writing about at the moment, which is maybe why it's sort of in the forefront of my imagination. But the premise is that the main character, Coretti, she's the elder sister, and her very beautiful younger sister has killed three men. And she has an explanation for each of them. You know, it was always they were attacking her, or something happened, or it wasn't her fault. But the third man is the point at which, apparently, by definition, you become a serial killer. And so the third man is the one that sort of tips her over the edge into admitting that her sister maybe has a bit of a problem. And Coretti has been cleaning up for her sister in the most literal way, like literally bleaching bathroom floors, scrubbing things down. And I just, it's like, it's funny, it's quite dark, it's very moving. It's not in any way a whodunit, although it's a book about crime and the effects of crime. And I think I'm fascinated by books that make you sympathise with the criminal and want them to get away with it. And this for me was definitely that. Like, I sympathised with Caredi a great deal, but I also wanted her, because I liked her so much, I wanted her sister to get away with the murder and not be banged up. So I won't reveal what happens. It's got some nice reveals and twists at the end. But I highly recommend it. And bonus, it's really short. It's a beautiful little, quick little read in a world where there are lots of chunky books. So perfect for a flight or a train journey.
Fantastic. Another another great pitch. And you brought it in at 2 minutes 20, Ruth. So that was excellent work.
Like the book, short but sweet.
Short but sweet. Yes, indeed. What a great book it is, and I'll come back and talk to you about it in just a moment. Returning, though, Gillian, to Sarah Lotz, I loved your pitch for this. And it's, I'd sort of not thought about the book for a little while, and then it's all come back to me, because it's one of those ones, I suppose, you know, and we were talking about genre bending earlier with your book, but like, it's one of those things that on paper you kind of go, oh right okay, and then when you read it, you're like, oh, she's done it, and I'm totally there, and I'm with the characters.
I know. Always think sometimes it is easier just to execute it and be like, I know it sounds mad, but here it is. You know, I think sometimes the best books are that way, but you need people to have faith.
I think you know, it could have been so easy, not necessarily for Sarah, but for an author to just write the love story version of that, you know, the wrong email gets sent and then a relationship strikes up. But to actually then go, no, that's the very beginning, and that's how we're going to bring these people together, but I'm going to take it this step further. It's like, okay, now we're
I always admire that. Like, I sort of, it's a risk-taking author, isn't it? And I just think, it's like, I recently read Together by Julie Cohen, which I'd not read before, but it takes a massive risk at the end. There's a huge payoff and it's really dark, but I won't spoil it for people. But I do just admire, even if sometimes you think, bloody hell, like, I just think I admire it, because even if it's off the wall, like, it's way more interesting than a lot of stuff that's out there.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it, and I loved your pitch for it. And as you said, you know, it is a love story, but there's so much more to it, and there's an excellent payoff as well. So great pitch, thank you for reminding me of that one, because it is quite a new book, but I read it a little while ago, so it's nice to have thought about that again. And Ruth, I absolutely love My Sister the Serial Killer. I remember when it first came out reading it, because it, as you say, it's so short. The chapters, as I recall, are really short as well. They're really punchy. And I had the great pleasure of having Oyinkin on this very podcast and talking about it. I love that you sort of got something from the sister, you know, the sort of sisters in the story and the sisterhood part of it, which I do think is very important, because it isn't just a sort of mad book about someone who kills people. You know, there's a lot more to it, as you said, and it is funny. Like, the dark,
yeah,
the
it's
sort
really
of dark
funny.
Humor is
and
funny.
It's not unintentionally funny, because you can see that Oyinkin Braithwaite is completely in control at all times.
Yes.
But it sort of feels unintentionally funny, because, like, this awful stuff happens, and you're kind of you're sort of wincing and laughing at the same time.
Yeah, it is. It sort of conjures that mix of emotions, which feels weird, but also, like, it's, as you say, it's just sort of so enjoyable, and puts you, you know, really gunning for the sister. You know, you really sort of find yourself being on her side. And in this wonderful world where we've got so many things going on, it's nice to have a sort of short, sharp book to get to as well. Wow, what a great pictures from both of you. Thank you. And two fab books. It's not often I've read both of the books that have been pitched, and I'm often sort of writing notes to myself, thinking, oh, that sounds good, I'm just going. And in this case, I've read them both, and I just, oh, it's going to make it even tougher. But I think we're going to go with My Sister the Serial Killer. I think that's the winner, Ruth. You just picked it. But I, having read them both and listening to your fab pitches, I can recommend both of these to anyone listening because they're really, really great. Very different books in many ways, but they are really good and well worth a read. And two other books I can recommend to you are Wrong Place, Wrong Time by Gillian McAllister, which is out now and it's published by Michael Joseph, and The It Girl by Ruth Ware, which is coming in August, August the 4th, I believe, published by Simon & Schuster and available to pre-order now. I'm certain, Ruth, you can probably go somewhere and press a button that means it will arrive in the post on the 4th of August.
Absolutely, yeah.
What an absolute pleasure to have you both here. Thank you for your recommendations. Thanks for spending this time, and look forward to seeing you in person, hopefully later in the year, at one of the many literary festivals.
Yes, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Joe. This was awesome.
Thank you both.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.